Welcome to Inside the World Economic Forum. Today's podcast is dedicated to our annual meeting theme, The Great Transformation, Shaping New Models.
Hello, I'm Michael Hanley.
And I'm Michelle Mishler.
It's the week before Davos, and the excitement in the hallways is palpable here at the headquarters in Geneva.
Yes, people are rushing back and forth, getting ready for next week.
Yesterday in the house, we had the world's press for our pre-Davos press conference, where we revealed who's coming, the program. It's going to be quite an exciting meeting this year.
Yes, it is. And at the same time as the annual meeting is going on, we have the open forum, which other than the annual meetings by invitation only, in the open forum, anybody can come. And that takes place in Davos at the same time. And we have some of our participants that are at the annual meeting that are also on the panels, on the sessions at the open forum. So it's going to be very, very interesting. We have sessions ranging from leadership, responsible leadership, to is this the end of capitalism, talking about water scarcity, some religious themes as well. So it's open to anybody. Anybody can come, be there early enough so you can get some seats.
So who's on some of the panels?
Well, we've got Ehud Barak, who's on one of the panels. We've got Gordon Brown coming as well, who's going to be speaking.
And it's where? It's at the Methodist Church.
No, it's at the Alpine Mittelschule, which is in Davos. It's about a 10-minute walk from the Congress Center. And no registration required. Just be there early enough.
Fantastic. But there will be, you'll be live tweeting also from the open forum?
Yes, we'll be live tweeting. You will be able to see it on the live stream as well. So well worth looking into it. We also have our website, which is www.openforumdavos.ch. So you can look at the whole program in English, German, and French. And you can see who is on which panel and what would interest you.
Not just the open forum, of course. The annual meeting is live tweeted almost constantly over the course of the week. It's live. All of the public sessions are live streamed. We are pulling content in from the 260 sessions that we have at the annual meeting constantly to our website. It's a full on week of it's intellectual Disneyland, as we say.
It absolutely is, and you don't even have to be in Davos Cloisters to actually take part. You can just go online, and you'll get all the info you need.
So today's podcast is very exciting. We have we've got Klaus Schwab, our founder and executive chairman, talking to us about what he's excited about this year and the innovations that are happening at the annual meeting.
That's right. And we're very lucky to have him. He's got a very, very busy schedule. So it's very interesting to hear him speaking. And then also we are going to be hearing from some of our co-chairs that are taking part as well this year and their views on the Great Transformation and where it needs to take place.
Fantastic. So with that, let's open the floor to Klaus Schwab. 42 years ago, he invited 444 business leaders to an obscure Swiss mountain village to talk about how American management techniques could be applied to European businesses. Some 42 years later, we have Davos sets the agenda for the world's leadership over the course of the ensuing 12 months. Here he is talking about why this year is special and what we have to look forward to.
Last year, 2011, has shown us how complex the world has become, how much we are driven by time, how much we are interconnected. There are many new actors in the world, and we all know that the challenges which we have on the global agenda, on the regional agendas, on the industry agendas, cannot be met by governments alone, by business alone, or by civil society alone. What we need is a platform of cooperation. That's what Davos is about. That's what the World Economic Forum is about. We are a multi-stakeholder organization bringing at the beginning of the year all the major decision makers together to define what are actually the priorities on the global agenda and what should be done. What are possible solutions? Davos is a place for interaction, for informal interaction, but of course, everybody should leave Davos with a much bigger insight into what's happening in the world, into what the expectations of our neighbors are. And in this respect, this year's annual meeting the annual meeting of 2012 will be a very special one. We will not look just at the crisis situation. As the theme says, the great transformation, elaborating the new models, we will look what's really happening fundamentally to the world, because even crisis management has to be put into the framework of the big transformation of our world, which is driven by technological progress, by societal changes, and so on. So what we wish to do is that everybody coming from Davos is much more aware of the transformation we are undergoing and is equipped with new thinking, with an awareness of the new models we need to really solve the issues. There are some innovations in Davos this year. For example, when we look at the future of the world, we absolutely have to integrate the young generation. There are over 50% of the world population which is below 27 years old, so they have to be integrated, and we have made special efforts to create a new community among the many communities which are integrated into the World Economic Forum, the new community of the global shapers, extraordinary people between 20 and 30 years old. But we also will look particularly at the issues of morality, of ethics. We have many prominent leaders from faith churches. We have cultural leaders. So Davos should not be just a World Economic Forum. It should be a World Humanity Forum.
And now we hear from Michael Andrew, Global Chairman from KPMG International. And he tells us a little bit about where he thinks dialogue should focus this year.
The world's population has just hit 7 billion people, adding another 100 million of aspirational consumers to the marketplace. This growing middle class in emerging countries want access to Western goods. They're going to shape the economic trade zones of the future. And equally in the West, where we have an aging population, which are going to put increasing pressure on the healthcare systems, on the social security systems going forward, means that those Western governments have to respond and react in very different ways. Equally, the issues around food security and water security will become increasingly prevalent in the same way we've had to address energy in recent years. These are new challenges for global governance. I think in our profession there are going to be some profound changes. First is the emergence of new trade zones. So increasingly business will be done not on a per country basis, but by region or sub-region. That'll mean also looking at smart business models in the back office. Where do you actually deploy your resources and how can you make them much more mobile around the world? Secondly, with the focus on reforming capital markets, greater reliance will be placed upon providing assurance on different sort of key measures and decisions that the market wants information on. This will expand the scope of audit, for example. Third, with these new and emerging markets, governance frameworks have become more important. If international investors are going to compete in these marketplaces, they need to be comfortable that modern processes are in place that align with their business philosophies and strategies around the globe. This means educating a lot of these markets about the importance of having strong frameworks of corporate governance, risk management, and market entry strategies. Organisations have to be very adaptable and innovative in the next decade. The important thing is instilling a culture of thinking continuously about how I'll improve my organisation. Look at new products, new ideas, new ways of doing business. The second aspect is to actually recognise that we're becoming a much more interconnected global organisation. So fully understanding the models that apply in the East, how to do business in South America, what are the key priorities in the Middle East, for example. The days of having a simple domestic mindset in your country are well and truly over. KPMG has a critical role to play in working with NGOs, businesses and governments to lift the living standards of many of developing economies. This means not only providing funds and aid, but bringing our intellectual and strategic capability to reforming these markets, whether it be in education, in resource availability, in housing, in addressing some of their key social problems that will actually allow them to to attract further investment, open up their markets, and lift the average income of these populations. Partnerships are the clear way to get this done. KPMG is very much committed to working with global organisations of a like mind to achieve this important social objective.
Another of our co-chairs, Peter Sands, Group Chief Executive of Standard Chartered PLC, believes that the global recovery will continue to be turbulent and uneven.
Well, as I look out over the next 10 years or so, I would highlight three big changes, big transformations that I think are going to happen. The first is a continuation or acceleration of the shift in economic power from, broadly speaking, West to East. The West is going to go through quite a difficult period of adjustment, of deleveraging, of economic change as it adjusts to the excesses, the bubble of the pre-crisis era. And that is going to take some time. Meanwhile, Asia and much of the rest of the developing world is going to go through a period of continued rapid growth of urbanization, industrialization, which will also bring some real social challenges. So that's one big transformation. A second continued source of transformation has to be technology. The pace of innovation in IT, in genetics, in advanced engineering continues to reshape the world we're in. And that's an arena of huge opportunity. The third change, and one where we will have to apply some of that technology, is all about the environment. We've just crossed the 7 billion mark in the world's population. The climate change statistics are becoming ever more reality. And I think over the next decade, we are going to have to face up to and be very determined in our approach to dealing with the challenges of the environment. Well, the banking industry has already changed very significantly since the crisis, but I think it will have to continue to change quite radically. And I think there are three different primary drivers of that. The first is simply that banking has to recognize its role in the broader economy and society and refocus and recommit to that role of enabling businesses to invest and grow, enabling consumers to live their lives in the way they want to. A second big change and related to that refocusing is the scale of change in the regulatory world. We already carry as banks double the capital we carried before the crisis, but there's still a range of regulatory changes that are in flux, still coming in. And that will have profound changes to the shape of business models in banks. A third force reshaping banking is technology. Banking at its core is fundamentally a digitizable industry. And like other digitizable industries like publishing or music, it will be fundamentally transformed by technology. And I see that happening at accelerating pace over the course of the next decade. I think the first step is for banks and bankers to acknowledge their role in the broader economy and society and to take responsibility for the way we play that role. We have a fundamental role. We're like the oxygen that enables the economy to work. We help businesses invest and grow, to trade and invest. We help individuals live their lives in the way that they want to, saving for their retirement, buying a home. That kind of recognition of what we're doing is central to us playing our full role. But we can also help address specific problems that society faces. For example, financial inclusion, the provision of microfinance. At Standard Chartered, we have provided over $700 million in microfinance in a whole range of countries across the world. We can help in meeting the challenges of climate change by financing new and renewable energies or ways of mitigating the impact of climate change. So working with different sorts of partners, NGOs, governments, other companies, banks can play a very significant role in helping the world meet the challenges of the next decade.
And finally, Pierre Nanterme, he's the chief executive officer at Accenture, and he gives us insight into what he feels will require transformation over the coming years.
We are actually seeing three great transformations taking shape. First, there is the transition of economic power to developing and emerging economies. As a result, the people in these markets are becoming more affluent and will expect more in terms of goods, services, and quality of life. Second, in the next 10 to 15 years, we will see a great transformation to a sustainable global economy as we become a planet of 9 billion people with finite natural resources. We'll see more focus on balancing growth with the more efficient use of food, energy, water and materials. And third, we'll see transformation with greater urbanization. Today, 50% of the population lives in cities, and that is expected to increase to 70% over the next 30 to 40 years. We will see the emergence of intelligent cities that can deliver innovative solutions to their citizens, from waste management to water management. Over the next several decades, we will need more open and more collaborative business models, and we will see more complex networks and end-to-end value chains. The creation of truly intelligent cities will require coordination from big infrastructure players, telecommunications leaders, information technology giants, and leading utilities. In our industry, we will see a shift to models based on shared risk and rewards, where the consulting and technology service providers are paid for business outcomes. As business leaders, I believe we have an obligation to find innovative solutions to the massive challenge of youth employment. Developing a skilled and talented workforce is the most effective way to provide jobs and a future to the next generation, while also building a competitive organization. We need to work in new ways with educators and others outside our organizations to find and develop the right skills and talent required to succeed. To quote Klaus Schwab, the next decade will be the decade of talent, where talent acquisition, development and retention will determine success. We are seeing a shift from the old models of corporate responsibility and philanthropy to what we call a convergence economy that is based on partnership. Business is increasingly working in partnership with governments and NGOs to tackle the big issues like education, health, and economic development. At Accenture, we believe one of the most important things we can do is to help form new public and private partnerships to address the world's most complex challenges. If we can do that, we will deliver on Accenture's long-standing vision to help improve the way the world lives and works.
And that's it for this week's edition of Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michael Hanley.
And I'm Michelle Mischler. And stay tuned for next week when we will be on location in Davos Cloisters, bringing you the very latest from our annual meeting.